Welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we would quite like another go, please, in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, the dream of European glory is over, for this season anyway, but we bow out with our heads held high and securing the knowledge of Francesco Totti's favourite pizza topping. So, what have we learnt from our European adventure? Well, we know that we weren't just there to make up the numbers, and perhaps, with a fully fit squad, we could have been dreaming of a trip to Dublin in May still. We also know that we're not out of the running to qualify for next season's competition, and there are still thousands of seagulls not ready to hang up their passports just yet. So joining me today as we reflect on our European campaign is, of course, Alan Wares. We welcome back Tom Hylands, and we also welcome back Andy Bass. So then, so close and yet so far, chaps.
Yeah, it was it was great whilst it lasted, you know. I thought it was a massively successful campaign. And to be honest, I think we did as well as I thought we were going to do.
Just owe those 90 minutes in Rome.
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's just, we could have. I think there's always going to be a what might have been. I think, you know, no Matoma, no Pedro in Rome probably cost us the dodgy third goal and the fact that we let our heads drop for a minute or two after that third goal, which obviously the fatal fourth.
I mean, that game in Rome, I mean, obviously the scoreline flattered Roma a little bit. I mean, they were probably deserved winners in that game, but it didn't totally reflect the game, did it?
No, not at all. And you look at it and go, you know, inside the first 10 minutes, if that deflected shot goes in from Welbeck instead of hitting the bar, that probably changes the game slightly. And we had our chances in Rome, but we had that kind of self-destructive element of our game that snuck in this season a bit as well. When we look at things like Villa, Luton and others, you know, sometimes we just compound our mistakes and make it so much worse. But ultimately, you know, we gave ourselves just a bit too big a hill to climb last week.
Seven hills,
yeah. So one of those things.
Yeah, when we lose, we do it in style. You know, we've won big this season. I think people have forgotten we've actually got a 4 and a 5 this season. Admittedly against poor sides, but poor sides are there to be beaten. But yeah, you could argue that, was it a 4-0 game? Well, Roma scored 4, we didn't. So yes, it's a 4-0 game, but
Can we just point out the fact that they only actually scored 3 legal goals?
Well, yes, but yeah, that's, don't even, I mean, we could actually have an entirely separate show about VAR, but even I wouldn't listen to that. So no, I mean, but the point is that we had 8 games. Look at the stats. Look at the headline stats. 8 games, 5 wins, 1 draw, 2 defeats, 5 clean sheets. I mean, if at the beginning of September when that draw was made, I wouldn't say you'd have bitten your hand off for it, but you thought, well, that's not a bad start into Europe, would you?
No, absolutely. And I think you also look at the teams that we played. You know, I think if had to choose what European teams in that competition would you want to play in terms of status? Well, I've watched us beat Marseille. I've watched us beat Ajax twice. I've watched us beat AEK Athens. I've watched us beat Roma, albeit not on aggregate. But the point stands, you know, they're 4 iconic teams. I think, what, there's 2 Champions League winning teams in there.
Yeah.
And they're European big guns. Yes, they might not have been at their kind of most powerful when we played them, but ultimately we can only beat what's in front of us. And to say that we've beaten all those teams in 90-minute matches is pretty incredible.
Can someone remind me, did Roma drop down from the Champions League?
Yes. No, they didn't.
No, they didn't.
They finished second in the group that had to go through the playoff. And
Ah, okay, but my.
they beat PSV in the playoff. And,
Oh.
but what you have to remember is with Roma is basically we played the wrong Roma. We needed to play. We probably wanted to play the Mourinho one, which was rubbish,
Yes.
rather than the De Rossi one, who's actually quite good. Oh, look, I've got all these attacking players. Let's put them all on the pitch.
And the other thing with the De Rossi thing is, last week was only his second professional defeat as Roma coach. So, they have had an incredible upturn in fortune since we had the misfortune of drawing them, really.
Yeah, but the point is if we're going to win this competition, if we were ever going to win this competition, you know full well that the likes of Liverpool are on the horizon. So you know that if you're going to do this, you want to do it with such a sense of dignity that you know you've beaten big guns. You know, with all due respect to teams like Carrier Bag, you think, okay, well, we got past them, but we didn't. You know, we could say we got past, well, if we'd have got past Roma, and into the quarterfinal, I can't remember who Roma drew, to be honest, I now don't
Milan.
care. Milan. Well, like I say, if we'd have got that draw, wow, then we're going to do it. We were going to do it the hard way.
Now, interestingly, though, Al, a lot of our fans have already been to Milan this season on their
Through
way to Rome.
necessity rather than choice, though, isn't it? But I mean, Andy, when I mean we've had many discussions, especially when the draw was made. I mean, I think that's when it really hit home and the reality was starting to kick in. And then we had the first game at the end of September. And I think it was probably as much as people saying, oh, it's Brighton, it's De Zerbi, they're top at the other, top six side in the Premier League, they'll turn over Athens quite easily. And we had a rude awakening. But can you take yourself back to the day before the Ajax game and think, where can we take this?
I was a kid before Christmas, basically. I think the whole day, to be honest, I think that's part of why we lost the first game, because I think everybody was just pinching themselves. So the whole town was buzzing. The players were clearly buzzing. And then we sort of hit like European reality in the actual game, which was an absolutely cracking game. Really good, brilliant atmosphere. The Ike fans really brought it. Their team were strong, physical, and it was like, it was a real wake up call for us. And like, yes, yeah, so any notions that we had, oh, this thing's going to be a walk in the park, they were dismissed straight away. And it was just brilliant. I mean, Athens, Marseille, Rome,
Amsterdam.
Amsterdam, just insane.
That Athens game, though, Andy. I mean, this is something that has been quite synonymous with Brighton over a few years, actually. That when they do make a big occasion of it, and they do put the bunting out around town, and they make it this big occasion, we do tend to fall flat on our faces on those sort of occasions. I mean, I think in like the Bristol City game where we should have won the league. Obviously, the Athens game. I mean, obviously, I mean, we did acting on that day. I mean, they actually asked us to do acting. I mean,
Yes, we did. It was good. It was funny. Still on YouTube, I think. So,
is still on
if you want to
YouTube.
see us hamming it up outside the Caxton, look up the TNT YouTube account. It's amusing. But how can you not make a big fuss about that? It wasn't just another game. It wasn't just an incredible chapter. And I know people are sick and tired of us banging on about it, but
We're not.
there's no we're not on this show, but it is incredible. I think even to like people that just started watching us at the first season at the Amex when we were our idea of success was staying up in the championship. I mean, even those even though even that generation of fans from like the early Amex years would have thought we're never going to be playing in Europe, and to achieve it in the fashion that we did was great, and to acquit ourselves in the way that we did despite the fact that we had a lot of obstacles in our way, not just our opponents, but obviously like the injuries and fixture congestion and all that malarkey. We did amazingly well.
Well, the thing is, when you talk about sort of like, turning up at the Amex for the first time in 2011, there was some people, in the build up to the Amex opening, oh, you won't get more than 12,000 to 14,000. We can't get, a full house at Withdean. What chance do you have at the Amex? And you think, well, wrong question, buddy. But then when we get to the Amex, I mean, if anyone then says, hey, and if we, by some reason, we get into Europe in 10 years' time, well, it took 12, so not too bad. But getting back to the Ajax game, Tom, I just want to sort of ask you this question. Yeah, there was the celebration. Yes, and as Adi has said on this show many times, we played the occasion and not the game, and I think it got to them a little bit. But seeing as it brought us down to earth, do you think that the Athens defeat actually did the team a little bit of a favour?
I wouldn't say so much the Ike game. I think the first half at Marseille did the team the favour, because I think whatever was said at half time there, because I think, you know, in the stands in Marseille, it was lovely weather, beautiful, having a couple of beers, watching the game. But you kind of had a bit of a thought that, oh my God, this is actually a lot harder than we ever thought, and this is kind of coming off the rails. And I think the response in the second half, I think that gave not only the players a belief, actually, no, we're not here to make up the numbers. We can impose our game on these teams. We just need to be a bit more savvy. It gave the supporters the belief that actually we can beat these teams. And then I remember saying to someone after that game, I said to someone, we're going to win the rest of our group games.
Based on what?
Just based on that second half. I just felt like we finally found our feet. I think we finally were able to play the game that we've been playing in the Premier League. We were fighting harder. We became a little bit more physical and a bit more clever around how to beat those defenders. And I just think that that buzz and that reaction from 2-0 down, I mean, if you think back to just a few years under Houghton or Potter, we could never turn around a 2-0 deficit to get anything. To do that in Marseille, in that atmosphere, and kind of against the odds there, after doing our usual of a quick double, conceding, just showed that actually we could do that. And yeah, I just had that feeling that we can beat these teams. And, you know, Marseille away was arguably the hardest fixture based on where teams were at. In that period.
Were you guys there?
Yeah.
I was not. No, it's the only one
I didn't make. So I
only had 4 days holiday left for the campaign. So it went on Ajax and Athens.
Marseille, I've never seen anything like it in football, if I'm being honest.
What do you mean?
Just the fan culture, the atmosphere, the kind of ferocity of the crowd, the noise of the crowd, unmatched anywhere. When we got on the bus, I mean, it's something that will always stay with me. Get the whole presidential treatment in terms of the escorted bus, closing off lanes, closing off roads, and what would normally take 15 minutes takes an hour because they have to take you to another city and round the houses to get back. But as we're going, everyone in every car was giving hand gestures towards the buses. There were some people mooning out of their sunroofs. There was just like this complete antagonistic atmosphere there. And then when we got to the stadium 2.5 hours before kickoff, the ultras end was pretty much full already, singing songs, letting off fireworks, flares, all of that kind of stuff. And you were like, Jesus, this isn't England anymore, is it? Like, that was a proper welcome to European football.
I'm just still trying to work out how you pull a Mooney out of a sunroof. It's the logistics of that are quite tricky.
Yeah, they're very acrobatic.
Yeah, and as Tom pointed out, if it was a very warm day, so you'll find a way. You just get. I think once your backside's out the window, it's then seeing if you can get a tune.
I'm not going there. I am just
no.
Not
please
going.
Don't.
I mean, obviously, I mean that Marseille game as well. It was just there was that period just before halftime where we started to find our feet, wasn't there? And that I think that was the moment, the time where hang on a minute, we've got this. And then that gave us the confidence going in at halftime to come back out and actually and take it to them. And we did win out from there on in.
Absolutely.
And it was.
No, I was going to say.
It was just one of those atmospheres. I mean, obviously, we could only see it on TV, Tom, unfortunately. But it was for you, was that the most febrile atmosphere of the whole thing?
I think it was the best atmosphere in terms of noise. I think in terms of kind of aggression towards us, I'd say Roma was definitely better, but they seem more interested in us than actually singing a song or kind of getting support behind their team. You know, I think that was the biggest disappointment atmosphere wise for me in Roma, but had kind of that biggest feel of us versus them.
So we move on then to the Amex. We faced an Ajax Amsterdam side that was, I think at the time, about 18th in the table, really on its uppers, staring down both barrels, in a bit of a pickle. We couldn't have played them at a better time. In as much as we couldn't have played Roma at a worse time, we couldn't have played Ajax at a better time. And Andy, I think that's when we truly found our feet, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was a surprisingly, like, after all the drama of Marseille and the anxiety that we had for that opening half an hour and how we managed to, like, pull that game back, this game, we were playing, as you said, a team on their uppers, and it actually looked like it. It was like we went into that game thinking, okay, we got that point in Marseille, we're now in it, but we kind of do need to win this one because of the way that Ajax play. We can't really afford to do it if we want to win the group. And we actually just went out and got the job done. And I think that maturation process, you know, which is not complete by any stretch of the imagination, I think both the Rome games showed that we're nowhere near fully European savvy just yet. But we took our first steps in that Amsterdam, that Ajax game, and we made pretty short work of it, to be honest. There we go. Pedro, lovely goal by Fati, who I thought was really coming into his own in these European games. The style of football that our opponent were playing seemed to suit him a lot better than the football he encounters in the Premier League. And you know, you just got to see how sort of what a wonderfully fluid player he can be, his sort of movement. And he obviously repeated that in the second game. But yeah, it was great. It was just really, really nice. But it lacked a little bit of tension, if I'm going to be picky about it, because we won and we were comfortably the better side in it. And I'm just glad that, you know, that we were able to do that. And, you know, Ajax is still Ajax, no matter how poor they are. I mean, for us fans, it's Ajax, you know, it's something to get excited about.
Yeah, but Tom, when you're facing an Ajax whose main point of attack is Chuba Akpom, it does say a lot.
Oh, that, you know, one of my mates absolutely loves Chuba Akpom, and any time he does anything good, he messages me to make sure I know he's done it. Few and far between those messages, but he won't hear a bad word said. But yeah, I mean, that game's too easy. Everything felt too easy. You know, it was like a cup game where we play a League One side or something, without being too harsh on Ajax. It just felt like there was only one winner.
Yeah. Can I just add a caveat to that? We can say that with hindsight that it felt easy, but let's face it, we still hadn't won. And there was a certain level of tension. Now, I think probably by the time we got to the 80th minute, we'd have really, really needed to cock it up. And face it, we have done that before in order not to get all 3 points. And I think that it was also very important that we got a clean sheet. But it's easy to say, I think it's easy, well, probably for both Amsterdam games, it's easy to say with hindsight that, yeah, it lacked tension, it lacked the sort of pizzazz and what have you. But I think, one, we were settling into the European thing. Two, yeah, after the game, we think, well, Ajax weren't all that, even though we'd gone into it thinking, well, they're not all that at the moment, but we still have to do the job. But at the time, I certainly recall it being fairly tense. Maybe my memory's let me down.
I imagine because of the match situation was that we kind of did need to win it. So there was a tension in that regard. It's like we couldn't afford to not win it, really, you know, without making life very difficult for ourselves. So there was a tension with regards to what we needed as the outcome. But the players did not look as tense as you felt, Al. They seemed very comfortable.
I was actually referring to the fans being a bit tense, really.
I wasn't
Oh,
tense.
fair enough.
Tom?
I think maybe up until kickoff, but I think from the first minute, I mean, my memory of the first half is it felt like Ajax maybe had 20, 25% possession, and it was just all us dictating play. I mean, I can't remember Ajax. I don't think Ajax had a shot on target that entire game, did they? Or their first registered shot on target
There
was like
was
in the 80th minute.
the one where they hit the post and the ball it rolled across the
Yeah.
park. That was it. That was in
That's not on
Amsterdam, wasn't
target.
it? Yeah,
Yeah.
that's also not on target, AD.
Yeah. Oh, technically correct, Andrew.
Yeah.
Yes.
Somebody tells me they hit
But
the post twice in
yeah.
that game, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, it was in the same move. Hit one
No,
post and then
that
hit the
was
other post.
it. That one was in Amsterdam, but they did hit the post at
Yeah.
the Amex as well, but.
I think so. And there was they had a couple of opportunities towards the end. I remember Akpom actually came close, actually. I
Yeah.
remember, but it was. But you know, we got ourselves over the line, and we gave ourselves the opportunity to build on that by going to Amsterdam in November. And that
You
was.
had fun, didn't you, mate?
I'm still knackered. It was. Yeah, no, it was quite a surreal one. Obviously, we did the. We put on the show at the Amsterdam Comedy Cafe with Steve Grant and
Sorry, can I, if I can just cut across you there, mate, I've got to say this about you, and this is something that, you know, is really, really good. You have actually got, because, well, I'm saving for my wedding this year, but you have actually got not just the games from the European thing, you've got that also to take away with you. So, you know, even if it's, you know, we don't get to Europe for another 10 years, or we make a pigs, or whatever it might be, that your first European adventure also had something as brilliant and magical and I'm very spontaneously brightened as that. I mean, I hope you take that away with you.
Yeah, reminds me. I need to put those interviews out at
Yeah.
some point because we did.
I'm
It was
trying to
great.
say, I
We
hope you had a lovely time.
did. We had a great time. Sold out venue. Brian Owen came and did it. Did it a live Raw with us as well. Looking very nervous. He said to me, "I don't have to be funny, do I?" It was because obviously
Oh, are
Steve
you, at
Grant
which point
was.
you say, well, I don't worry about that.
Yeah, well, Steve Grant was very funny. I have to say.
Absolutely.
But it was an interesting day weather-wise as well. It was absolutely throwing it down in Amsterdam, which there was a lot of fans getting wet. And did we care?
Well, it was like Brighton weather, wasn't it,
I
really?
was going to say it was also throwing it down in the stands with the amount of beer that was going over people. But
It's kind of an interesting cross-section of European football culture that we've actually also picked up this year, isn't it? And yet, if you had to pick four clubs, I'd have said that of all of them, possibly maybe through even a slight dose of prejudice, I'd have said that the Ajax ones would have been the maddest. And yet, certainly in Brighton, I thought the Ajax ones, I don't know about you guys, let's throw this open. I thought the Ajax fans were by a distance the best fans from Europe that we had over this season.
yeah,
100%.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Okay, what's the end of that conversation? Fine.
Yeah, so someone agrees with Al, and that the conversation is
I know.
over.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm just going to go and put the kettle on now. You know.
Well,
But no, that go on.
we did have one of them on the show, of course, though.
We did. I think. Yeah. I think he was the one that actually was. You know, kind of the piece. No, they were just brilliant. I mean, their respect for it. I mean, they actually said, and I don't know how true this is, but you know, they said we didn't let off any flares in respect to your stadium. But I think probably what it is that there's an element of, and I'm sure they've had it, you know, being treated well in other places. But one they have, and I suspect it might be a privilege for them that their club is the first team that we have played in Europe. So they're, I suppose, for want of a better term, breaking in a virgin. And it's probably for them quite a little feather in their cap for that. And I think that they've seemed to have come over and had that kind of respectful welcome to Europe type thing, rather than being sort of like these boisterous black clad dickheads that we've had sort of far too many places. Because, like I say, certainly in the King and Queen, nice and noisy and raucous, but then they get on the bus and they're all well behaved. And all right, they make a noise in the stadium, but you know, a totally different kettle of fish to the other three sets of fans.
Well, some of them weren't quite so well behaved as we'll come to, which is why they were there was no buses, busing them back into town after the game on Thursday night. So,
All right. Okay. Well, fair enough. But, well, I liked them.
but But yeah, I mean, it was, but I mean, that game again was there was a little bit more jeopardy in that one. I mean, Amsterdam Ajax were a little bit better, and we've already mentioned that chance they hit the post and ball around. But again, Fatty was very, very good, and Adingra as well.
Yeah, just superb. From I mean, one of probably Fatty's best game. He was just magic up front, and he was just mesmerising them. And yeah, like Ajax were twice the team they were at the Amex. They played much better, and they did have a threat. But we scored after 15 minutes. It was like we just got there, and almost instantly you thought, yeah, there's no way we're not winning this.
From a howler as well.
Yeah, I was just thinking as well when you said about how different Ajax were. I think we also played six different managers in those eight games. which is crazy, but absolutely agree, like that game definitely felt different. I thought the pre-game atmosphere in Amsterdam was quite cool and pretty pretty special, but yeah, Fatty and Adingra just seemed to be the game where they clicked in terms of partnership and were completely on the same page. Yeah. So it kind of hurt when a few weeks later they're injured or out, so couldn't actually find their feet in the league.
Well, you could say that about half our squad, I'm afraid, this season. But yeah, I'll give you an idea as to how our Ajax have improved. They're now fifth in the table in the Eredivisie, admittedly 30-odd points behind PSV, but they're not going to be in any danger of going down. So they've actually sort of sorted themselves out. Yeah. I think,
and they'll be in with a shout of qualifying for Europe again next season.
I'm sure they will.
In some competition or other. But
absolutely. So then on to Athens. A sneaky sort of, you know, we've got two wins and a draw in four games. Which, let's face it, at the beginning of that competition, we'd have bitten your hands off after four games. You think, well, two wins, that'll do, you know, fine. Off to Athens, another one into the unknown. Andy, did you have a nice time?
Brilliant time. This was my actual favourite of the games, because it was a great atmosphere. It was a much more raucous atmosphere than Amsterdam. And again, Athens were, to be honest, we kind of mugged them off a little bit. I thought Athens were probably
very good.
and they were still strong. They were still physical, but we showed real grit and determination. We were like, you know, what we sort of lacked in quality, we made up in character and spirit. And you could feel it, the physicality of the game. It was a proper old-fashioned cup tie, I thought. It was like two teams sort of belting the crap out of each other. And it was just refreshing. It was hypnotic to watch. Probably not the best quality football, but I couldn't take my eyes off it. The atmosphere was brilliant, but, you know, we could make ourselves heard. It wasn't a pointless adventure that it might have been in Marseille, for instance. But you know, we could make ourselves heard. Super yeah. Atmosphere, and just really, really hard fought win. And the celebrations at the end were fantastic. We did get tear gassed by accident. I mean, they weren't tear gassing us. It was tear gassing. Like, it was a bit of a shame, really, because like pretty much every Ike fan I met was just brilliant. The welcome in the city was fantastic. We didn't have any problems at all. I don't know if Tom did. He's got his hand up.
No, I'm just more amazed you met an Ike fan in Athens, because we couldn't find them for love or money. Everyone we met was either Panathinaikos or Olympiakos.
And yeah, we met a lot of people who wanted us to win that day as well. But some of our hotel staff were Ike fans, and they were very nice. But you know, it was great. We did meet a lot of their rivals who were delighted.
But Andy, but speaking of meeting people, I mean, this whole European tour has just been completely random on many things. Where, you know, on the day after the game, the amount of people that just like wandered up to like take in the Acropolis, and there was Lewis Dunk.
Yeah, amazingly, we're one of the few people that didn't meet Lewis Dunk or Tony Bloom in Athens. I don't know how we managed to avoid them, because they were absolutely everywhere. but But yeah, I mean that was a nice thing. I mean, that was, best thing about Athens was like the weather was so good. I mean, I know this is a football show, but it was absolutely cutting it down at home. And we go to Athens, and you just get like 2 days off the absolute dire weather there at home, and then you're just transported to this amazing capital city, just full of history. I mean, we were lucky; we were staying quite near the Acropolis, and there were some great bars and restaurants by there where we could just sit, chill, relax, pass away the time of day. Actually, have to get shade because it was a bit hot. Who knew? I forgot what hot weather was like. And
Although what was quite funny, Andy, was the fact that we'd go out in shorts and t-shirt, and people on reception were like, "You're crazy going out in that. Won't you be cold?" And it's like, "Nah, it's like 20 degrees colder back in the UK."
And there's some people back home that will still be wearing shorts and t-shirts back home. So,
I mean, it was December, guys. Come on.
yeah, but December in Greece is a little bit different to December in Brighton, isn't it? So,
This is very, very true.
it was, yeah, I was kind of hoping that Ike were going to at least scrape into the Conference League. I was a bit disappointed they didn't because I kind of liked their team. I thought their team was really, it's really hard working. I thought they gave us both games they gave, I mean, they beat us. They should have beaten us in the second one. I thought, of all our opponents, they were the ones that tested us the most once we got out of that first half of against Marseille. And yeah, I felt a bit sorry for them not getting through, but I'll certainly look out for their results now. I like them. They're good.
Tom?
I do think though with Ike, a lot of it is they were kind of that team that we always struggle against. Strong, physical, not really set up to completely open up and go after us. And we always struggle to beat those teams no matter what the competition is. And I think, you look at their results against other teams in the group that probably just know how to play that a bit better. And I think that kind of explains some of it. Echo that, like, brilliant team to watch, great fans, and like Athens for me was just the best few days. Like, it was a slightly smaller number of people out there. Weather was brilliant. Just, have Fat Boy Slim as well, which was good fun. And yeah, just the whole package, really.
So as much as we've said about Ajax's climb up the table, I just want to point out that Athens, they have something called the Super League. In the they have something not dissimilar to Belgium, and as much as they have a regular season, and then from there, it doesn't matter where you finish, you have a playoff. So in their regular season, they finish second, and they're one match into their six playoff matches. And at the moment, they're top of that. So after the playoffs is when they ascertain as to who's going to get the Champions League spots. So at the moment, with five games to go, Ajax are actually top of the table. So we're not going to play them next season because they're probably going to be in the Champions League at this rate.
No, well, good luck to them. Good luck
Good
to
for them.
them. Absolutely.
Unfortunately, one team that is still in this year's competition is Marseille, who have made it through to the next phase, despite us taking 4 points off them in the group phase. And actually, it's probably the highlight of the whole thing for me in regards to that moment where Pedro gets that last minute goal and the Amex goes wild.
Well, that was my moment of 2023, if you remember rightly. But so seeing as I've spoken about it, I'll leave this open to Andy or Tom.
I mean, now we talked about the Ajax game not having nerves or tension. My God, couldn't watch half of that game because it was just so on edge. And just like that was a proper kind of knockout game of football where a draw did no one or
Any
changed
favors?
nothing. So, like, there's something special about last minute goals in football and last minute winners, and especially when that player then jumps into the crowd. Like, it was just an absolute release. And some of those videos are incredible of Pedro, and it was a cracking goal as well. And it needed to be because their keeper made some ridiculous saves at that game. And yeah, I mean, that video, if that's not on the pre-match montage from next season onwards, I'm not sure what else deserves to be on there.
Andy? Yeah, I mean, easily my moment of 2023, just for like that explosion of joy when he scored. I've never seen the Amex react like that to a goal. I think that's the most mad that stadium's gone. It was because it didn't quite come out of nowhere, but it was just like everyone really wanted it, and the team were just doing everything they could to try and win that game. The desperation was there. I loved like the application that we had in that game against, you know, a wily opponent, and we just did it. We forced the issue. That goal goes in, and I think the fluidity of Pedro's celebration, where he just, like, you know, he scores the goal and he's running away into the east stand almost in one movement, and then the perfect leap into the crowd. I mean, he couldn't have timed that any better. And then because it's like the family stand, you've got all like these little kids going around him and jumping up and down, as well as just like the blokes and the adults all in there as well. But it was such a joyous scene, and there was a real acknowledgement that, yeah, like, you know, we've just won the flipping group. We have just won the group.
Well, which was important because it gave us a month off.
Yeah.
Which was also not just the group. It was the group of death.
Yes.
Like, we won the group of death.
It was death by a thousand cuts, wasn't it? I mean, this is the point of all the things that we're going to take away from our opening season in Europe. For me, it is actually, yes, there's that Pedro moment, fine. There was the comeback against Marseille. There was the way that we could actually just swap Ajax aside. There was the adventures. Everyone's got their own story and what have you. But for me, and I know we're getting to Rome in the second half of this show this week, mm-hmm. but finishing top of the group, you know, of a group of teams with so much history, so much pedigree. The only thing that probably wouldn't have made it the group of death is that Ickle Brighton were in it. You think, well, who were they? You know, interlopers. You know, sort of people who just bought a ticket and won the jackpot, won the lottery. But there we were, marching past them all, winning the group. And I think that of all things in Europe, that for me is the overriding achievement.
Yeah, Tom?
I was going to say, like, we're kind of ignoring Roma for a second here, but
good.
You know, my takeaway from this experience, like, for me, it's been an experience of a lifetime, and just being able to do that with mates that I've known for years through football, but at most you would go away maybe overnight. If you were drawn away in Manchester on 8 p.m. for an FA Cup game, for example. But like spending 3-4 days in European cities with this group, like getting to experience that for the first time as a group of friends. I just feel like the friendships through football have become so much stronger because of this as well. And it's something that we're going to have as a shared identity for years to come. And it will never, no one can ever take that away. We might end up playing in League Two in 10, 15 years time, but we'll always say, do you remember that time we beat Ajax home and away?
And I think also, don't forget, because of Brighton's history over the last 20 years, I will put it to you with absolutely no evidence whatsoever, apart from my own, like I say, enormous ocean of prejudices, that the average Brighton fan has more friends, football friends, and the average fan of other clubs, just because of what we've been through over the last 20 years and what we've had to do. So going to Rome or going to Marseille and actually meeting up with not just three or four people, you know, but about 20 or 30, I'd imagine that's the thing that probably makes it all the more magic, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And just one other really small thing, though, is there is a slight sadness as well, because we've all lost people through the years that would have absolutely loved that, and did find yourself kind of at some of those games, especially the Ike game, and I think in Marseille, going, oh wow, this person would have absolutely lived for this, and that's kind of I think that reflective piece is quite important as well.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. We said on the show last week, didn't we, about how much Ed Bastwood would have loved to be in Rome.
He'd have turned his nose up at Rome and said, well, it's not Siena, is it?
Well, this is true. Okay, well, we're going to come talk about Rome very, very shortly. But first, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast. As ever, we're brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil has given us quite a delightful shirt to have a look at here. Unfortunately, Andy was actually in the shop with him when Phil bought it. So he knows what it is already.
And I knew what it was already anyway.
So Tom.
So I'll describe it. I think I know what it is anyway.
Go on, then.
So it's a blue and white shirt, so good colours straight away, but it's a solid blue with a white V, big V across it. It's a Kappa shirt. Don't see too many of those, but points towards European. And then I think there's a big clue in the sponsor, because the sponsor is Banca Lombarda, which there's not too many of those around, and I can't imagine a regional bank would sponsor a team outside of that region. So right. It points towards Lombardy.
Hang
region.
On, Tom. Did you say a financial institution sponsoring a team outside their country? American
no,
Express.
No, I said a regional named bank. but the reason I think I know this is because of the badge and the fact that there was some fans of this club in front of me.
Oh, really?
At Alma a few weeks ago, trying to get the attention of a certain Roberto De Zerbi with their Brescia flag. So, and it had that emblem on. So that would be my.
You're making out.
Well, who knew, Andy, that this might be a Brescia shirt? any idea on the year on this one?
I'm going to say 2012. Just throw it out there.
No, it's not. It's going earlier than that.
1994, 1995. I don't actually know.
This is what Phil has to say about this particular jersey. He says, here is your shirt of the week. And it's the 2004 to 2005 home shirt of Italian Serie B side Brescia Calcio. They were formed in 1911 and they go by the nicknames of the Rodinelle, which translates to be the Little Swallows, and I Bianca Azzurri, the White and Blues. Home is a 19,500 capacity Stadio Mario Rigamonti, named after the player Mario Rigamonti, who began his career with Brescia in 1944. Rigamonti died along with the entire Gran Torino team in the Superliga air disaster of 1949. Brescia are a bit of a yo-yo team, having switched between Serie A, B and C many times, although since 2000 they've played in Serie A for seven seasons and the remainder in Serie B. Notable former players reads like a bit of a who's who of the good, the bad and ugly in world football. Roberto Baggio, the divine ponytail himself, finished his career with Brescia in 2004, making over 100 appearances for them and scoring nearly 50 goals between 2000 and 2004. Georgie Hagi spent two seasons between 92 and 94 in between his stints at Real Madrid and Barcelona. Mario Balotelli strutted his stuff there in 2019-2020 season. Pep Guardiola made 13 appearances for Brescia in 2003. And Andrea Pirlo. These are all stellar players, aren't they?
Absolutely. It's a bit like having a Brazil side that played for Worthing, isn't it?
It's just insane. And Andrea Pirlo joined Brescia on loan from Inter in 2001, playing 10 times. And of course, there's a link to the Albion, which I think you all know already. Let's look no further than the current first team head coach, Roberto De Zerbi. Roberto was born in Brescia and he signed for AC Milan in 1988 and spent four seasons on loan to lower league sides, during which time his registration was sold to Salernitana, and he went on to play for, amongst others, Foggia, Catania and Napoli, and during which time he went on loan to Brescia in 2008 for around 20 games. So thank you for that. Of course, you can see that and over 130,000 other shirts over at oldfootballshirts.com, Alan.
Yes, I mean, I would actually say that irrespective of the fact it's the home shirt of Il Gaffer, it's actually probably one of the nicest shirts I've ever seen on Old Football Shirts Ruinedbyfashion.com. It's an absolute beauty. Whether I wear one or buy one, I'm not sure, but for the just the style, I absolutely love it.
You mean it's not Basingstoke?
No, that was that was weird. Just, you know, yeah. That was a real magic roundabout moment. Right, back to the more mundane. Swindon. This is Radio Reverb. It's a local community radio station for Brighton and Hove. It can only accept by way of funding, donations, sponsorship and grants. We don't accept advertising, so you're just going to have to put up with us for 58 minutes every hour rather than cutting in for an advert, I don't know, some horrible ailment that you've got. It's the whole way through. With that in mind, we are going to be hosting, the station will be hosting a Reverbathon on the weekend of the 27th and 28th of April. We ourselves will be hosting our show at 11 o'clock on the Saturday morning ahead of the trip to Bournemouth. So if you do feel like chucking a few quid Radio Reverb's way, please go to the newly revamped and newly designed RadioReverb.com website. Go and have a look. Go on. All black and white and orange. It's lovely. Hit the donate button. There's a nice big donate button there. The harder you hit it, the more money you give us, which is brilliant, to please help keep this wonderful community asset going. We'll give you more details closer to the time of the Reverbathon. But in the meantime, if you can help the radio station pay its obligations, then that'll be fantastic.
And of course, if you want to sponsor the show, we're open to as many sponsors as we can possibly get for this month to help keep this radio station in operation. If you are interested, just contact us at thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk. Right then, on to Rome. And we talked about the game. I mean, it was just an experience going there, really. I mean, it was planes, trains and automobiles to get there for many of us, because who knew there wasn't actually that many direct flights to Rome?
Well, there was. It's just that the people are greedy and taking them up. I do love the fact. Yeah. I just love the fact that actually that what we're talking about on this show is more like a travelogue rather than a football show, which is brilliant. So, you know, let's put it this way. It's better than travelling to Basingstoke. Can we pass this by, apart from actually it being a cautionary tale, which sadly we don't seem to be learning, looking at the Luton game, looking at other games. I suppose actually what it probably does do is also it alleviates our bank accounts a little bit, because that it was being drained. Well, there's one thing we will learn from a European experience, Tom. It's bloody expensive, isn't it?
Yeah, biggest sigh of relief when we went 4-0 down was my bank account. well done. You can have a breather for a bit.
So your bank manager was actually in charge of VAR at the Olympic, yeah. Was it?
They took some money there, didn't they? They were well set up for selling beer in the stand. That's one thing you can say.
Yeah. Who knew an Italian side could be slightly dodgy? I who knew?
We can't afford the lawyers, sure, the AD. Be careful. So we've kind of done the Rome thing, but what we haven't talked about on the show is the home game. And Andy, wasn't it beautiful just to sign off with a win?
Yeah, prior to the game, I mean, there's I kind of had like a 5% hope that we would do it.
I was confident.
But the main thing for me was for us to win. It meant that we beat every single opponent that we met.
Yes.
In the competition. And, a win over Roma is not to be sniffed at, even if it turns out to be a somewhat Pyrrhic victory in the end. What I liked was the attitude of the players and the fans. We took it seriously. It was like, it was, you know, the impossible job. But the fans got into it, really got behind the team, and absolutely could not fault the effort of the team in trying to manufacture a miracle. And I enjoyed it. It was a fun game to watch.
Well, it was a really good performance, wasn't it, in its own
right? Cracking performance. After the disappointment of the game there, where we didn't do ourselves proud at all, I thought, you know, if I were to use a word for the game in Rome, naive would be the number one.
Well, I've got written down here, actually. here's the thing. Now, obviously, I mean, I don't think we're gilding the lily by saying that the Amex can at times be a little bit flat. And you know, but when the atmosphere is electric, and you know, like when the roof came off when Pedro scored, like the playoff game against Sheffield Wednesday, where we were up against it in that game as well. We had all those injuries in the first leg, and we had a mountain to climb in the second leg, and the crowd was up for it, and it was electric. It was
But
exactly the same on Thursday night.
to be honest, though, I think the atmospheres for all of the home European games are actually very, very good. And I always thought, you know, on TV, they always say, you know, European nights are special, and always thought that was some kind of just, you know, marketing
Tedious
mumbo jumbo.
cliche, wasn't it?
Yeah, tedious cliche. But actually, you know what? There was nothing like Thursday nights at the Amex, that much so that did you see our friends from Croydon decided to play Bodo Glimt last Thursday as well in a friendly just to get in on the Thursday night European action. But
Deary
that's how
me.
much it meant. But
Now,
it
I
means
was also
more.
just going to say how much it meant to Roma as well, because as much as they think, you know, we've seen sort of certain reports saying, oh, you know, Rome eased through. Well, if you're going to look at the scores, then you could argue that. But I'll put this to you. When we scored our goal, I mean, don't get me wrong, their outhousery during the game was legendary, but in the next few minutes after the goal, their outhousery was off the scale. They got really, really cheesed off that we scored, and I can see that. I personally felt they were rattled. I mean, don't get me wrong, they were a decent enough side that they knew how to hold it together, but it's one of those things. I mean, I suppose probably with the entire tie, both home and away, you can actually think of everything that starts with the phrase if. If this had happened, I suppose you could say it with all football games, but if we'd have scored within a couple of minutes after Danny Welbeck's beauty, then, you know, one Roma probably could, possibly would and could have collapsed. Discipline is clearly an issue still up there, but two, I think that the Amex roof would have been disappeared by now.
Yeah, Tom.
Yeah, but I think to your point about Roma's antics, they were at it in the first game as well, you know. They clearly looked at teams that have beaten us and gone, you need to get under their skin, annoy them. And that rattles us. And I think, you know, for me, the takeaway from the Roma game in terms of performance was first half, absolutely electric, spectacular, on and off the pitch. And after half time, we just struggled to reach the same level of intensity, both on the pitch as players, and in the crowd. You know, and I'm not too surprised because it was a crazy, performance in the first half.
Well, by the time the second half turns up, you're absolutely, as fans, we're absolutely exhausted and you need that extra lift. If, you know, again, a goal 10 minutes into the second half, again, the place will go mad. You think, okay, we've got 35 minutes to score two goals. Who knows? Dot, dot,
Yeah,
dot. And it is.
I
Go
would
on.
like to point out though, Al, that the Roma did actually have the ball in the net before we scored, and
Yes.
having watched that again today, I can't see an awful lot wrong with that.
Well, at the time, I thought it was a bit dangerous because Van Hecke's head did dip down a little bit. And also, again, we're back to the opinion of the referee. Don't forget, in European games, any foot above waist height is, you know, even if it's nowhere near a player, they'll give it. And if it's going to be that close to someone's head, yeah, in terms of English referees' attitudes to it, you're probably right. But in terms of, you know, this fellow was German, but there's a lot of European consideration where a high foot and even a medium level foot is going to get punished. So, but, you know, them's the breaks.
There was no way his foot was not going to be anywhere near Van Hecke's head, and that's why the referee disallowed it. I think you could argue that was it really that dangerous? Certainly,
No,
I would.
I don't
To
think
be
it was. I
honest,
mean, don't.
I would say it wasn't. I would have allowed that goal. But I'm glad that for once the letter of the law was in our favour.
I mean, don't forget with Van Hecke, he's about 8 foot tall. For him to get his head down there, it was only 2 foot off the ground. It was like.
Well, don't forget, I mean, the player, I mean, don't get me wrong, the player threw himself at it. But again, like I say, an English ref probably, as you say, an English ref probably would have allowed it. But I mean, in this instance, it's good job that the Roma player connected with the ball, because if it had kicked Van Hecke's head, he'd have had to go off injured. I mean, the player,
I think
not the.
the law is quite clear that that was a correct decision. It's just whether we think that the law is correctly
Yeah.
written.
Well, I've got a few notes I've made on this one. One of which was we saw Adam Lallana start this game, and it was the vintage Lallana that was started this game. He was absolutely magnificent in that first half.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. And I think he brought the experience that, frankly, we were lacking in Rome. As you said, you used the word naive. Put Lallana on the pitch, you might not necessarily get the easiest free-flowing. And don't get me wrong, his outhouser is still there as well. That's vintage Lallana. But yes, he brought a sense of serenity and stability, even if it wasn't sort of like the flashy play that, we possibly wanted and needed to go 1, 2, 3, 4. But yes, and then after that, and I think probably the other thing we've got to realise is as good as Lallana looked in the first half, you can see that 90 minutes are going to be from here on in rarities and maybe even never agains.
I don't think he's played 90 minutes for us yet, has he?
I think possibly once or twice, but that'll be about it.
Yeah.
Well, let's put it this way, you can hear the knees creaking. But yes, I mean, listen, most of the team, nearly all the team, was superb in the first half. And actually, oddly enough, I think the thing that did for us was the substitutes. None of them came on to make a specifically positive difference. Now,
I thought Fatty was all right when he came on, to be fair.
he was better than he has been, but probably, for whom he replaced.
He put in some really nice crosses, and there was one, and this is probably the moment I thought, well, no, we're not going to do it, because I think it was quite about 60 odd minutes.
Yeah.
I
Welbeck chance.
might have even been the first thing that he did, actually. But he just absolutely amazing crossing, and like Welbeck's got to get on the end of it. And I think Danny could have scored about four or five over the two games, to be perfectly
Yeah.
honest.
Yeah. I
It
mean,
just
but the
wasn't.
one he did score was probably arguably the goal, the prettiest goal of the whole campaign.
Oh, it was an absolute peach, because he couldn't have put it anywhere else and it go in, because the keeper would have had it covered. But it was dramatic, and it kind of came out of nothing, actually. I think we were like discussing that maybe we'd missed an opportunity, and then suddenly he just pings it in. It's like, oh my God, and we just sort of.
Well, I think you could see him sort of gain himself just for once. He managed to gain himself that yard of space. And once he can do that, then yes, he'll get his shot away. Whether it's an accurate shot is another matter. But I think it's just for once in that game where previously the Roma defence was that tight on him, he'd actually managed to gain himself that yard of space, and that was enough. Sadly, he couldn't do it again for the rest of the
We
game.
tested the Roma keeper. I couldn't really ask for much more.
Absolutely.
It just it was the job was too big. I think the game might have been different. If we had, I think 2-0 would have been a reasonable defeat, a reasonable reflection of the game in Rome, and that would have made for a much different game.
I
Were you
mean, Tom, I mean, Sevilla in the Roma goal was absolutely magnificent over both legs.
Yeah, I mean, made some incredible saves, and we had the chances to overturn that deficit for sure. I mean, incredible, some incredible saves. I think one was from a Fatty shot that came from nowhere that just dipped like nothing ever since before, and he somehow got a hand to it. But it is what it is, and to be honest, I was quite happy at the end, and that, and I think also we won the Battle of the Banners, so that was the most important victory
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
To
Now
take
here we go.
away. Come on. Now you mention
we you knew this was coming anyway, but I mean, you just preempted
it.
it.
Right.
So.
You were in the room, Tom. Speak.
So yeah, well, the WhatsApp group, as it were. I think it's to be honest, I think it's very similar to how a lot of the banners and stuff get fought about with NSK. It's an element of impulse. Obviously everyone saw the Roma banner about the late queen, not the current queen, I imagine, at their place. And it was just one of those things on Wednesday. It was as late as Wednesday, actually, that the conversation actually just started, and it was some mock-ups of their banner saying pineapple belongs on pizza, and then that just kind of spiraled. I can't remember exactly who came up with bringing Totti in, but I think that was a genius move. Who's royalty for Roma fans? So bring Totti into it. So I think it was a natural impulsive reaction. I think at about 5 in the evening, someone's gone, right, we're going and buying some fabric. So that's kind of how it came about. We had earlier in the day, there was a few stickers as well. So that's one other thing, actually, the fact that Roma fans made stickers especially for Brighton, I think was incredible. Another kind of moment of
were they abusive?
Quite fun.
Were they abusive?
They were. They had. They were telling us to go off somewhere.
Oh right.
Silly
little children.
So yeah. So our stickers were, the same with Totti loves pineapple on his pizza.
It went viral. So the match of the day, we're tweeting it. It was all over the radio. It was all over the TV. And there's now, I believe there's now a campaign for Donatello's to actually rename their Hawaiian a Totti.
Well, I did suggest that on Twitter. And oddly enough, I was out and about in town on Saturday and went into Donatello's for a bite to eat and did mention it to them. They said, oh, yeah, we've heard about this. And I'm thinking, hang on, this is Donatello that sponsored Brighton for years. So at the very least, I can tell you that they'll think about it. But whether they do it or not, I don't know.
The crazy thing is, I think it's one of those where I think Kieran Maguire's original tweet has had like 2 million views on it or more than the amount it's been shared. Like, it's literally tens of millions of views on it. And then, like, there's even like articles in tabloids about it. There's we saw something as well where someone was saying that an Italian colleague of theirs, after kind of being explained it, it's become a whole meme in Italy, apparently, where they're changing the bottom half of the banner. And so it's like just completely, completely gone off the rails, really. But I think what it is, it's a really good example of terrace humour, where it's not offensive, it's not hurting anyone, it's just a good laugh. And I think that's what football should be about.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And when you compare it to the banners from our friends up the road, which are just completely mind-boggling. And
my favourite banner was Ipswich. Do you remember that one?
Yes, I do. Yeah, it wasn't at Ipswich. It was Ipswich fans at the Amex.
Yeah.
And even their local reporter, the East Anglia Times or whatever it was, because for those that don't remember, it was along the lines of it was something along the lines of money can't buy. It was a limp joke on corporate football, but with the gag being based around another financial or a bank company's statement. And as the bloke from the East Anglia Times said, of all clubs that you're actually going to try and criticise their fans for, Brighton is the last ones you aim your that sort of thing at. And I remember talking to some Ipswich fans, I think all of us did, talking to Ipswich fans after the game. They said, well, one, we didn't know about the banner. Two, we couldn't see it. All we heard is you lot booing. We had no idea why.
It said, there's some things money can't buy. Football isn't one of them.
Thank you. Yes, it was. Yes. Yeah. And it was, and even then they got the financial institution wrong. Because I think it was supposed to be a play on American Express's. It was feeble. But yeah, the Palace ones are just sort of these banal political corporate. It's the sort of things that you have in they're meaningless phrases you have in corporate team building sessions that don't mean anything.
It's blue sky thinking, I believe.
I think it's grey for them.
We are channeling the energy that which
we
got
are. It was all a bit
with oldfootballshirts.com.
But just to leap onto Tom's extra thing there, he's saying it's a meme in Italy. All I'd say is that I have been looking that particular banner has actually made it into so many websites around the world onto, you know, let's put it this way, Corriere della Sport ran it, L'Equipe in France, the main sports paper in France, ran it, Le Figaro in Spain ran it, there was Brazilian national papers, there was Japanese, German national papers, they all ran the banner. So when you say it's viral slash global.
The one thing I would say, though, is it doesn't work if Roma didn't do their banner first.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole story, is it's the riposte.
Okay. So, Tom, it's been a massive European adventure, a learning curve. What do you take away from it?
Probably just a sheer amount of pride and happiness, you know. Been able to do things that I never dreamt was possible within supporting this little football club. And just, you know, the people that I've done it with. You know, these are memories. These are like lifelong memories that will just remember silly little details from a drunken night watching Fatboy Slim suddenly in a few years' time. So, yeah, I think that pride and just we'll look back fondly.
Andy, same question to you?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much the same as Tom, really. Just literally an incredible journey. Just I loved the trips. I wish I could have gone to Marseille as well. So I'm going to keep some leave for the second half of the year just in case we do it again. But it was everything I wanted it to be. It was just like the cities were amazing, the people were amazing, the whole experience was incredible. I think on a sporting level, I think we showed that this was not a fluke. I thought we acquitted ourselves really well against the odds to get us to the knockout stages and still stay in the top 10 of the Premier League with all the injuries we've got is just simply amazing. And I don't think, you know, Roberto and the players are getting enough credit for that, to be perfectly frank. It shows that, you know, we have stepped up a level as a football club.
We've been put on the map, haven't we?
Yeah, and I think we're always looking up now. We're not looking down. So yeah, we may have been in that gutter now. We may have been in that gutter before, but all we're looking at is the stars now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I'll take out of it. It's just insane. I mean, obviously, doing a sold out show in a comedy club in Amsterdam, full of Brighton fans, was just surreal. And, you know, just wandering around Rome, and every time, you know, you're walking past like the Trevi Fountain, you're going up the Spanish Steps, you're walking around the corner, you're going to the Vatican. Every corner I turned, I saw somebody I knew. And, you know, and it was just, and a lot of people came up to me, oh, yeah, we really love the show, really love the show. And it's, you know, which is really quite humbling, actually. And I really never quite get used to that. But, you know, this is in a foreign city, in Rome, in Amsterdam. I couldn't do the other two, unfortunately. But, you know, just seeing so many familiar faces, people that I'd seen at Rochdale and at Halifax and at Carlisle, to see the same faces in Rome and in Amsterdam, it is just insane.
The day before we played AEK, I put a tweet out about saying that Brighton and Hove Albion was about to enter the next chapter of its history. And it was a momentous day. It was a momentous occasion. We knew what was coming. We'd worked it out. You know, when we beat Southampton, got the draw against Manchester City, we knew what was coming. But we didn't. Because what came was something completely different to what I was expecting. We have, like you say, we put ourselves on the map. But the tweet I put out was about four people who, I think was alluded to earlier in the show, four people who never made it this far on the journey, and four people who should be forever remembered in the history of Brighton and Hove Albion. And once upon a time, if you rewind 20 years ago, and I'm thinking of the times when the club was trying to justify the new stadium to the city authorities and to the national authorities, it's going to bring in £20 million a year, and it's laughed out of the room. And all these people who knew better, the likes of Roy Shooter and Paul Welsh and Ed Basford and Sarah Watts, people who knew better, who led us and have since been proved right. And it actually breaks my heart that they never got to see what we did this season. It's an amazing journey, which I didn't think we'd get to. Now we've exited it and we've got another set of priorities for the rest of this season. All of us can hold our heads up high with dignity and say we were there.
Just going to add to that, that it's very much a legacy of those who saved the club being fulfilled. And I think what you can see now in the last year or so is Brighton slowly becoming a proper football city, where the football club is at the centre of the city and the community, and everyone is behind it. You see it more in terms of the street art around the city. You see it more in the advertising of the city, in the banners around the city. Like, this is that the club's come of age and has fully now become kind of, you know, the focal point of everything good about Brighton.
Absolutely. And let's just hope this isn't just a one-off and that we can repeat this experience. And if you're hungry for more Albion Raw, you can tune in again next week. But until then, thank you to Andy Bass. Thank you to Tom Highland. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Eddie Peckham. This has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, and in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you then. Yes, bye. It's